Welcome everybody to the very first episode of the Kazumatsuri Canon Book Club podcast. I'm your host Aspiring. Today we're here to discuss the Naiki route and everything up to that in the common route. So joining me today we have the cast of Pepe.
Hello everybody, I see you all again.
Instead of Biscuit Dough, who's usually been our regular for most of these book clubs, we've got some fresh meat for you guys, so joining us this time is the Rational Pie.
Hey everybody, how's it going?
A.K.A. Senpai.
Senpai! And
yeah, sure.
And our special guest for this podcast is Suika Shoujo.
Hey, what's up?
Joining us again for... Well, I guess like you were here last week, so you had two podcasts
It feels like I never left.
So, you may be wondering why we're doing canon at this time, because there hasn't been an official localization of canon ever announced, but... This is something we've been wanting to do for a very long time. I know that a number of the forum members have been advocating for this book club for a long time, and we've had to delay it over and over again because keeps announcing shit and we can't keep up. So,
How dare they?
How dare they? So now that the Clannad book club is over and we have a little bit of breathing room before Tomoyo After comes out, we figured it was time to finally get this visual novel out of the way and done with. Yep. Not to say it's like a chore or anything, but it's just like, this is,
Well...
It's the first of Key's visual novels, and in an ideal world, I would have loved to make this the first book club, but things didn't really work out that way, and a lot of people want to read Air first. So now that we're getting the canon book club out of the way, we'll have all of the first four of Key's visual novels... Book club.
Big four.
that's a verb, isn't it? Book club?
It can be.
Yeah.
If you want, we can make it one. Executive decision. It's now a verb.
Excellent. Yay.
Yay. Party. But yeah, so...
I'll go contact Merriam-Webster.
So if you don't know what a book club is, our book clubs at Kazumatsuri are basically events where we see the entire community join together on the forum to read through and discuss a visual novel together. At the moment, it's been pretty restricted to Key stuff. Actually, it's not always visual novels, but it usually is.
The Charlotte Book Club, never forget.
Yeah, so we've done Planetarium, Air, the Charlotte anime, and then Clannad. And now we're doing canon. So,
this marks
our fifth book club, fourth officially.
Wow, time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, man. So yeah, like basically everyone on the forum will be contributing their discussion in the forum topics for each character route. And then we'll join together on the podcast to kind of bring all that discussion together to create something that everyone can enjoy. So that's basically what we're here to do today. I hope you all enjoy it. We've got 5 episodes planned for the next few weeks. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So first, I guess we should start by introducing canon. So Pepe, would you mind taking off here for me?
Hey, okay, so Canon was Key's first visual novel, and I guess a slight history of Key, how the main cast of Kijun, Maeda, Shinji Orito, Hinoe were all part of Tactics, and then they left and then decided to make Canon under a new brand called Key. Anyway, Canon was released on June 4, 1999, which was, how many years ago? 17 years ago, right?
17.
That was a long time ago.
No, actually, 17.
17 years ago. So, like, it really shows in the game how old it is, but it's still kind of charming, you know?
It's timeless.
And, it was.
It really is.
That's the soundtrack. One good way to put it, yeah. So after it was released, it was released as an 18+ version on June 4, and it was also re-released on January 7, 2000 with an all-ages version. And I think that's pretty unique because I personally don't know any other game at that time that would be so quick to release an all-ages version.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you,
no,
this
not
was,
at that time.
This was an all-ages version for the PC. Usually they only make all-ages versions for console games.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be very telling of the kind of mindset that Key was in when they made this game. Obviously, like, they started out with Tactics as an Eroge developer, like, Dorse was purely smut, as far as I'm aware.
I mean, if you play Moon, and you look at the role of the erotic stuff in comparison to the role in canon, it's really different.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have to comment, like, I don't feel like the hate scenes are that impacting on the story of canon. They're just
definitely not.
Yeah, they're definitely just there.
And then you
see they sell copies.
And then you see that like a year later they're quick to release an all ages version, so it's like they're pretty aware that like the hate scenes aren't the primary focus here, and I think anybody who would purchase canon for that reason would be quite disappointed.
Yeah.
Well, it's quite respectable that probably they had this intent from the get-go. So, after that, it's had a lot of different releases. Like, it had a Dreamcast and a PS2 version featuring voices. Alright, so the English patch of Canon was released sometime in 2009.
July 21st, 2009.
Yeah.
My birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Well done. Happy 12th birthday to me.
Happy 12th birthday. Wow, okay.
You needed the all-ages version, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the all-ages patch was released by, what's the name? Non-Directional Translations. And I assume that they released the patch as a response to the success of the 2006 anime.
I just want to make a correction there, Pepe. You said Non-Directional Translations did canon, but there was also Hazel, which was involved. It was like two groups.
Yeah, Haleth came out with it, and then, yeah, Non-Directional Translation picked it up basically because Haleth sort of dropped it. Like, he was just like, all right, there it is, I'm done.
As fan translations usually go.
True.
Yeah.
They lose their passion or whatever, their motivation. Yeah.
It was, 2006 anime was actually very successful compared to...
I think that's the reason most people know about canon, at least in the West.
Oh, for sure.
So yeah, it was one of KyoAni's more renowned works, and
I think it really showed that you could actually make a good anime adaptation of Key's works. Because before that, I wouldn't say that any of the adaptations were even worth watching.
But we had the Clannad movie.
That was we had to wait for the dub for that. You know, that's what made it worth watching.
If you could see my face right now.
Pretty much after the patch, there's been nothing like no advancement to canon, so it's kind of been buried under the snow for the past 7 years. For the past 7 years, yes.
Dang! That's true.
And now we are digging up these memories once again for the Canon Book Club.
Nicely done.
That transition.
So then, starting off our very first podcast, we're going to bring back a tradition that everyone loves, the 30-second recap. And today, our guest, Suika, is here to provide for it.
All right. Okay. Should I go?
When you're ready.
All right. Our protagonist, Dark Master Yuichi, returns back to a town he visited as a kid for the first time in 7 years. He's immediately, and by immediately I mean 2 hours late, met by his cousin Nayuki, who sleeps so much and so deeply even a sloth would admire her. He starts a charming school life and meets a bunch of girls who aren't relevant to this episode of the podcast. Eventually his anime amnesia starts to disappear, and he remembers that Shota Yuichi was actually kind of a dick to Nayuki. But it's okay, since ice cream solves everything. Then, since this is an eroge, he realizes that the true incest was inside him all along, and retreated to some good old-fashioned cousin lovin'. But the plot device truck stops for no one, especially not Akiko. Nayuki gets depressed, but is pulled out by the power of cousin loving and miracles. Everyone, including Akiko, lives happily ever after.
Yay!
Very good.
Pachi, 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 pachi.
Bit over time. 35-second recap.
It was fine when I... Oh. Whatever.
Ice cream solves everything. Stuff. That's the main point.
That is the main point.
So, just general thoughts. How did everyone feel about this route? Pa, you go first.
Well, I would say that the common route's pretty good. Nayuki's route is kind of short, but I do really like the chemistry between Nayuki and Yuichi. And I like Nayuki as a character. She's got a lot of little quirks and that sort of thing, but overall, I like her. I definitely enjoyed this route.
I actually forgot how much I liked Nayuki until I reread the route. I forgot... Like that, I wasn't playing the voice version, but just like reading, I was reading her lines in her voice, and it just reminded me. I'm like, oh my god, this is a great character. Just how like sleepy she is, how like the way she talks, like All her dumb little quirks. Like, I love it. It's that she is like the quintessential key heroine, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was sleepy for most of my time reading it, so now you
did perfect.
At least I can it have a point job. To empathize with her character.
Yeah, exactly. I too need more than one alarm clock at a time. So.
All right, and Pepe, how'd you find the whole thing?
All right, well, a little bit of intro. I started reading Canon because I bought the Memorial Edition in Japanese and the patches for Standard Edition, so I told myself, okay, I'm going to try reading this in Japanese as it was intended with no voices, and I did very slowly, like one real-life day equated to one in-game day of reading, and I realized I couldn't catch up, so I gave up and then I started reading in English, so now I'm reading in English like everyone else. But one thing I noticed about the Common Root is it does go into like a lot more description than other VENs that like rely on voices and more elaborate CGs, I think. So it's more like a novel in that sense, probably because of the technology back then. So that's my
Yeah, they didn't have much choice.
That's my comment about the Common Root. The rest of Common Root felt like it was leading to Naiki's route because I only picked the Naiki choices, pretty much. Mm. Like, I didn't even see Shiori more than once or more than twice, so...
I don't think I saw Mai at all, either.
Yeah, meeting Mai is optional, even.
Yeah.
So for Naiki root, especially, I actually thought it was, on a romance perspective, it was quite heartwarming. Like, I got some doki dokis, man.
Mm-hmm. What'd you rate it?
I rated it a 4. I thought it was good. Not excellent, but it was good.
Pot?
I also gave it a 4, actually.
And Zuka?
I actually haven't come up with a rating yet. I'm leaning towards probably a 4.
Okay.
Right. And you, SP?
I'm gonna give it a 3 for now.
Alright.
Oh, going Aspie. Against the crowd, I like
High
it.
High standards.
Yeah. We'll talk more about that later.
Alright.
True. No. It's been on my backlog for a while. I still haven't gotten to it. Might have to bump it up on my list.
So I guess we should start from the start and start talking about the Common Root. So Canon has a bit of a weird structure where it might be a normal structure for the time, but basically all of the character roots are kind of intertwined with the Common Root, and there's not much of a distinction when one character's root begins and ends. I kind of narrowed it down to like the 18th is where the 18th is where Naiki's root begins. Because that's kind of the point where their relationship starts shifting towards a more romantic focus and all that jazz. That's also kind of the point where he's, like, ostracized all the other girls. But,
Yeah,
so, like, anything beyond that. So, how'd you feel about our first introduction to the wintry town of Canon?
I always see, like, the wintry town of Canon as a really good setting. I think it's probably one of, if not my favorite setting in Q's works, because it has this very somber feel to it. It's like, you can see from the town that it's not all smiles and the happy-go-lucky. There's this kind of darkness to it. But at the same time, you can see the beauty of the snow.
Yeah.
That's something I like about Canada.
Yeah.
I grew up in a country where we had no winter. We didn't have four seasons, so I guess snow is a bit more mysterious to me than it is to most other people.
Same here. Like, I live in Australia, so snow is definitely not a thing I have. I've seen it.
I live in the...
It snowed once in my life.
See, I live in the Midwest where it's not uncommon to get, like, several feet of snow at a time. So, for me, it's more... I could relate to Yuichi's struggle in the cold.
Yeah. I kind of have both personally, because I grew up in a city that didn't have any snow at all, and then I've recently moved out to the east, and now I, have snow all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can see it from both perspectives. It's like when I first read Canon years ago, it was like, oh, well, you know, snow, that's kind of cool. And I wonder, you know, what it would be like to be in a snowy place. And now I'm just like,
get me out of here.
Yeah, now that I'm in a place with actual winter, I hate it.
Yeah,
I guess I'm kind seriously. Of, I guess I'm kind of lucky because living in the southern hemisphere, I'm able to read kind of in the coldest part of the year.
Oh, see, it's like super hot outside right now, so it's actually like cooling me off sometimes.
Yeah,
I find the music has a very sort of cooling quality to it. All that of the bells it's very, and
yeah, it's very serene.
Things. I've heard the soundtrack called a bit jazzy, almost. Yeah,
it is very jazzy. I think that was normal. Like, I think jazz was getting popular in Japan at the time. Like comparing to Air soundtrack, which was very piano-ish.
Yeah.
Canon brings that kind of jazz, and it you also uses a bunch of synthesizer sounds that
it was the 90s.
Very reminiscent of the 90s. And in a way, even though I didn't read Canon in the 90s, I have this 90s nostalgia from it, which I love.
Yeah, no.
That's one thing I love about the Canon soundtrack.
The synths kind of remind me of, like, street musicians. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I often see like these street musicians who have I forget what the instrument's called, but it's basically like a wind instrument synth keyboard.
Melodica?
Yeah, melodica. That's the one. And I've seen a lot of street musicians with melodicas, and they have that sort of synthy sound, especially let's see, Winter Fireworks. That song has that synth like super, super clearly.
See, now that you mentioned that, I can totally imagine like walking down the shopping center and just hearing that on the side of the street. Like it fits perfectly.
Another thing about the soundtrack, I remember, like, I always the character themes are very like they're used a lot, to the point that like I honestly felt that Ayu's theme was the theme of the shopping center.
Yeah,
or like Nayuki's theme was like the morning theme or the staying at home theme.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it kind of implies how characters are tied into their location.
Yeah, that's very true. You don't really see characters outside of their context that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
One thing I want to bring up is that me and Pepe actually went to visit the shopping street which Canon was based off in Tokyo.
Yay. Oh, really?
And we took some photos and stuff, but I might even put some up here. But one thing we're a little bit disappointed by is that in that, what was it, 17 years since the game's release, it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
It looks a lot more modern now than
I guess that makes sense.
It looks modern, like they're Gap, there's like Gap and H&M and stuff like that.
Still has a bit of that like sort of like old European feel to it, but it's mostly been replaced at this point, which is a little bit sad.
Imagine Ayu stealing from the Gap.
Yeah, it almost makes Canon feel like a sort of time capsule of that little point in the 90s, you know?
Yeah.
It's very endearing in that sort of aspect, just how... Yeah, it like perfectly encapsulates that feeling of nostalgia for the early 90s. It's really cool. And just how, like, technology isn't as much of a thing there, like... like, a lot of people don't even have cell phones, even though they existed back then. It's just,
Yuichi did mention that to Ayu, like, don't you have a cell? And she didn't even know what a cell phone was.
Yeah.
I think
which
it's
he
that
did know it was weird, but... Bonkas and Magaska brought up on the forum, what is your favorite background music in Canon? That's something they both wanted to know. So let's go around in a circle. Suka, what was your favorite?
Well, we were talking about this earlier, and I can't remember. What was the name of it? I think it was Two Steps. That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one that I always associate with Canon. Like, for some reason, when I think of Canon and I think of the BGM, that is the first song that comes to mind. It's not even my favorite. That's just the one that instantly comes up.
That one's big in the common root.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes me think of, running to school early in the morning. I think that's
the
most played.
I should put that on my phone and just use that as I'm running to class.
The running was another one. This is like kind of a walking sort of track.
I think the running was The Voices of Trees and The Bustle of Life. That's a very, very fitting BGM title.
Pai, what was your favorite?
I'm going to have to go with Yume no Ato. That song.
Can't go wrong.
I don't know if it really counts as like a BGM track because it's got so much of like Last Regrets in it. But there's kind of this one section that starts at around 51 seconds into the song that's sort of this call and response part that always stands out to me whenever I'm listening to the soundtrack, because you sort of have the melody from Last Regrets going, and then you have this sort of response after each one of the phrases that's just da 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 da, and it just it's an interesting call and response pattern because the call keeps changing but the response stays the same, and then eventually it just ends up going into like the response sort of like driving and just like going over and over again, and it just, I don't know why, but to me it just sort of like reminds me of that concept of like memories and like this sort of like nagging memory in like the back of your head that's just sort of like always there. And I don't know, that song just really encapsulates Canon to me and I love it.
In English, the name of the BGM is Remnants of a Dream, so that's very appropriate the way you understand it.
Who
was the composer for that track?
Shinji Arata? Oh no, it says composed by Key in the...
Well, that's helpful.
Alright then. Thanks, Key.
It just came out of the ether.
Jun Maeda.
Oh.
Alright. Fucking knew it. Blame Maeda for all your amazing compositions that have such deep meaning behind every note.
I mean... oh yeah, it does. It says Maeda. It's credited to Key, but then parenthesis, Jun Maeda.
Jun Maeda is Key. What do you expect?
Yes.
Did you forget?
All right.
Sasaga Maeda.
Sasaga Maeda.
And Pepe,
Sasaga.
What was your Sasaga. Favorite?
So for the longest time, my favorite theme was the theme that I didn't know was Ayu's theme, City in the Sunlight, because this is probably the one that evokes the most nostalgia out of me. Maybe because of watching the anime 9 years ago, or maybe because of what I was saying, how it has these really old synths to it that makes it feel like a 90s song. But
what was the Japanese title of that one?
Machi... I can't read the kanji because it's hard.
Was it Hitamai no Machi?
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. That's a really good one.
Yeah. But recently, I'm really liking Sea of Mist. I don't know the Japanese title, I'm sorry. But the reason why I like this is because it has this, again, a very somber vibe. And it also feels very jazzy. Like, I can see this BGM being used, like, playing while you're sitting in the bar alone at night, kind of wondering what's happened to your life. That's why I'm liking Sea of Mist. I think it fits the... It fits the setting of Canon very well. That's why I like it.
It's a very somber song, isn't it?
Yeah.
It only really plays towards the end of the route, too.
That's true. I was very happy when it started playing.
I have to, like, offer a opinion of a little bit of disappointment with the sound direction of this visual novel.
Why?
I feel like sometimes it hits the note really well, but other times it's just weird choices in weird places. The first time it really came out to me was when you're getting the scene with Makoto where she drops the cat, and it just plays like a happy, like, silly music. This doesn't fit. This is, like, serious, obviously. Yuichi is obviously reacting in a very serious way, enough to, like, you know, chastise her, but it's just like, the music just seems to... indicate, oh, silly Makoto, up to her old tricks again.
You mean you don't laugh when people drop cats off bridges?
No!
I can't say I do. another point where it really, like, seemed lacking to me was the mornings you get where after Akiko has been hospitalized, it's just playing this really, like, it's almost like a...
The same old morning theme, right?
No, it's not the same old morning theme, it's a new one, but it's like... It feels like they've just overcome a tragedy, almost. It's like a very, like, relieving sort of BGM. But that's not what you'd be playing at that time, because they just entered the tragedy. It's really weird. Did anybody else, like, feel dissociated?
Yeah, I would say I felt the same.
Yeah, I know. I did notice that.
Yeah, so there are some points where the soundtrack just... It felt short for me in terms of sound direction. Nothing against the compositions themselves. The compositions are generally really good. But getting back on the topic of what's my favorite, I'm probably going to have to go with Pure Snows.
Okay.
That track just, like, gets me every time. I think it perfectly encapsulates, like, the somber feeling of Canon in a really special way. It feels like... Like, I guess the instruments and stuff used, it just makes me think of the falling snow and sort of the emotions that can kind of bring.
Yeah,
they did. It's like a very sad snow.
I think they did a good job with the instrument choices, just in general. There's a lot of ringing things, there's a lot of, you know, they have a lot of bells. Even the pianos, they put a lot of sustain on them, and they make heavy use of sort of like these long legato phrases and things like that. I think it has that sort of sense of everything is sort of hanging in the air. Like, the notes don't just go away. There are a few background tracks that are a little bit more jaunty and staccato, but for the most part, it's like whatever they throw out there just sort of hangs for a little bit before it goes away. So staccato is a phrase that basically means that it's short, and so like something that would be cut off. So like, bop. And that would be a staccato sort of note. And there are a few songs that have that sort of sound. But for the most part, you have the sustain or you have reverb or something where it just sort of rings and you just hear it go on until it dies out naturally.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it is sort of evocative of winter. Because winter tends to be more quiet, there's less sounds out there. You don't have the wind rustling leaves and all of that stuff. You do tend to hear sounds kind of hang in the air a lot longer.
Yeah.
It does feel like... It's sort of like a sense of isolation, almost.
Yeah.
That comes with being stuck in the middle of a snowstorm, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It's like... It's sort of like... It's such a weird mix of happy and sad. It's a very...
Melancholy.
It's an evocative piece, but I can't... Yeah, melancholy. That's the word I'm looking for. It's definitely got a melancholy sort of feel to it. So I guess we should start talking about the bulk of this, which is Naoki's route and everything that comes with that. So I guess like the main purpose of this route is it's very much a romance route. There's not much sort of in the way of external conflict except for that bit with Akiko at the very end, but I don't think that's a focus. I think the focus here is on Naoki's relationship with Yuichi and the promise they made as children and how that kind of influences everything that's going on at the present.
Yeah.
I don't think that you can really separate what is Nayuki's route from what is the common route. I know that you can kind of say like on the 18th is where it starts, but I think that what makes Nayuki is that sort of like brother-sister relationship that she has with Yuichi and the way that she's kind of an ever-present force within the story. Like, she's always there from the very beginning. Like, she's the first character we see. She goes, you know, she's the first character that you see most mornings. You know, she goes with you to school. It's just that sort of... I think Nayuki really represents the sort of quiet home life that Yuichi and... pretty much most people would sort of like to have. And then I think when you go into her route, that sort of like you're seeing that sort of relationship evolve into something else. But I don't think that route means anything without having that sort of leading in part where you have all of that time together with Nayuki as a character.
Yeah, I think the common route more than should really highlight the Nayuki more than anything because, well, of course, you're living under the same roof. You're walking with her to school. She helps you get started with everything. I know the game also kind of implies this kind of brother sister relationship, and I know a lot of people felt that, but I personally did not feel that.
I didn't.
I mean. Maybe it's a personal thing because I have a sister and like we're only two siblings and I feel that my relationship with my sister is a lot more different than Yuichi's relationship with Nayuki even from the common route.
I don't know. I mean, like I have a little sister too, and I feel like it's not exactly the same, obviously, but I mean some of like the banter back and forth and all that. I feel like that is pretty similar to like a sibling relationship.
Right. Because a lot of the banter that Yuichi does towards Nayuki, he does towards pretty much every other main heroine. Like, how with Shiori, he tells her, Like, after she introduces herself, Yuichi tells her, you can call me Oni-chan.
Oh, that's right.
That just came out of nowhere.
And how he bullies Ayu pretty much every time they meet.
True, but that seemed more like flirty bullying, if that makes any sense.
Like, yeah, there's sort of like an endearing, like, warmth, I guess, to the way that he teases Nayuki. Isn't really there with the other girls.
And also just like teasing somebody about how they wake up in the morning. That's something you can only really do with somebody that you live with.
And yeah.
That definitely establishes that sort of brother-sister relationship to me, at least.
Okay, I mean, it's hard to explain something.
You could live with
something.
Someone who's not your sister.
Yeah, you could live with someone who's not your sister and you could still feel that way. Or fair someone enough, who's not but... family and you could still feel that way. It's hard to express this in words because it's a very more kind of feeling kind of thing. Like, yeah. I can't because I know that the narrative is getting me to feel that they're supposed to have like a brother-sister relationship. They refer to it many times, two or three times at least, but I just didn't feel that. So,
That's fair.
Yeah.
So one thing early in on the route, and I think one of the like main starting points of the route is when you decide to study with Nayuki. She mentions how like Yuichi has forgotten everything about him 7 years ago, and she said that maybe something really sad happened to you 7 years ago, something you want to forget. And that is something that I've already read canon, but that's something that is only referred to in Nayuki's route, and I think it gives a nice setup into the whole story of canon about how, yes, Yuichi has these memories, but there's something more to these memories. There's something that, like, you shouldn't just forget them and live on with life. There's something, you know? And Nayuki...
Memories are so important in this game. Like, it's from the very start, like, we make the whole point of it's been 7 years and he can barely remember a thing, and how he talks about how he doesn't want to remember.
Yep.
But then as time goes on, he starts developing that interest in his own memories again, and things start coming back to him. And it's kind of a big sense of mystery there. It's like, what really happened 7 years ago? And it becomes increasingly apparent that something big probably did happen that caused him to forget everything.
And I think for Nayuki, maybe the reason why she says that is because she was with Yuichi so much 7 years ago, and because of what happened to them. Like, well, we all know how Yuichi was an asshole 7 years ago and he threw away that cute snow bunny, rip snow bunny.
But he did that because he was in tremendous pain. We don't know why or how, but...
And I think Nayuki definitely felt that, but as a kid she didn't know what to do. So I think 7 years later, she's still trying to figure out why, you know? And I think that's another reason why she wants those memories. Like, she keeps pushing Yuichi to try to remember 7 years ago. Maybe because up to now, she still doesn't know what the fuck happened to Yuichi.
But really, though, that was never resolved in this route. It's just kind of pushed aside.
It was pushed aside.
Yeah.
But it was very heavily hinted at. And I think that was a point of the narrative, like telling you there's more to this story than just this route, you know? It's not just one route out of many multiple routes.
I think the other way that you could look at it is you could look at it from a character perspective of Nayuki and say that this was her kind of attempting to get some closure on that whole situation, you know, to understand why it was that she was rejected and why there was like this sudden change in this person that, you know, she had basically fallen for to not be the person that he was. And then he comes back and doesn't give her any answers to those questions that she's had for years. She's still looking for some closure on this.
Yeah.
And in the end, the closure doesn't come from finding out why he did that. The closure comes from sort of fixing the problem and going back and kind of, you know, having the whole thing sort of repeat in reverse. And then everything sort of solves itself by her and him switching roles and then doing the right thing.
That actually goes into Helios Alpha's key point. So he asks, so what do people think of the circular nature of the plot? And yeah, that, it was very circular about how Yuichi rejects Nayuki, and then Nayuki rejects Yuichi, and then he waits at the station the same way she did. I think there's one major point that was different from this circular nature. The main point being that Yuichi actually knows what the fuck is going on with Nayuki.
Mm-hmm.
True.
To him, Akiko is still family. She's not as close as she is to Nayuki, but she's still family. So in one way or another, I think Yuichi can empathize with Nayuki. So, and I think that empathy kind of brings into his solution to the problem of the root, where he records that whole really nice speech, I love that speech by the way, on the alarm clock. And then he tells her I'll be waiting at that place. So well, Nayuki wouldn't have been able to do that 7 years ago because she was just a kid. So she tried her best, and she did what she could. And Yuichi just simply wasn't in the mental state to continue with that. But now, 7 years later, I think they've definitely matured since then. They've definitely grew as stronger people. And I think that's the reason why, with this circular nature, this time around they were able to actually solve it and, you know, come to terms, essentially saying that even though I can't make miracles happen, we still have each other and we can allow ourselves to rely on each other.
Yeah, like the whole relying on each other point is something that occurred to me as important.
Yeah. Just before we move on from this, I also really liked how Helios Alpha pointed out the connection between the sort of circular theming and the actual name of canon, which is a musical term.
Yes.
Which
that's right.
Basically means a song where the theme repeats.
I'm glad we got you on for this podcast.
very
appropriate.
I'll be honest, all of this talk about music theory is kind of going over my head because I have absolutely no background, but it's pretty interesting to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely brings things more into perspective.
What do you guys have anything else to talk about the circular nature?
Not so much the circular nature, but I have, like, I'm really the critic of this route, but okay. In the past, we had the interaction between Yuichi and Nayuki, where Yuichi was a total asshole and, like, you know, fucked over Nayuki's life for a while, and then 7 years later they finally meet, and his first thought when he regains his memories is to say sorry for what he did. But is he really in a position to say sorry when he doesn't know what it was he did? Because he still doesn't remember what happened that day. Not entirely.
I think he is, because he still remembers what he did to Nayuki, and he probably reflects and realizes that that was kind of a dick move. Like, after that scene, he thinks, like, what if I was in Nayuki's place? Would I have been able to wait for 7 years, or would I have been able to just let that go? And I think that's when it starts to sink into him, like, yeah, I did a dick move. And that's what you call empathy right there. So
it is empathy.
It's Yuichi learning empathy after what he did 7 years into the future.
Yeah.
But it bugs me that nothing was resolved, because he can't really say, like, I'm sorry, and, like, I did that because such and such happened. Like,
I mean, I don't think you have to, like, be aware of why you did it to say sorry. You just have to be aware that what you did was not something that you wanted to do.
Yeah, I think in this case, it's not like he's apologizing for something specific that he did. It's not like he took something away from her. What it is that he's apologizing for not taking her feelings into account. And in that case, just the act of apologizing is showing that you're reversing that trend. You are taking their feelings into account if you're willing to apologize to them.
And I think that the fact that he's not trying to rationalize it either is also... It kind of means more. Like, he's not trying to convince her that what he did was, like, okay, and I feel like that makes it more sincere, almost.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess so. It just bugs me from a writing perspective that there's been no resolution in that point.
Well,
it really does feel like this route is a big prologue for other stuff to come.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we're reading it first.
That might have been the point, actually. I mean, it was written by Naoki Hisaya, who wrote more than half of the game. So.
And like I said, I think that was the closure that Nayuki was looking for, but she didn't get it. She got closure in a different form. So maybe you just ended up sort of wanting that closure and just never got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another thing that I really liked in this writing is when he first apologizes to Nayuki and like says that he loves her, she's like, don't, like, that's really mean to say that after all these years, you know? You kept me waiting all this long and now you've decided you changed your mind? I wish they went further with that, because that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. A really interesting reaction. But it's kind of like she just got over it after a day.
Yeah, I think that whole getting over it speaks to Nayuki's personality. It does, like, her saying, I'll forgive you after 7 strawberry sundaes is something very Nayuki. If it were any other character, it wouldn't have worked, but because it's Nayuki, it works.
That is true. She's a very forgiving character.
Yes.
Very patient.
Yes. Similar to her mother.
And I mean, they make that clear from the common route too. Like there are a few instances where she just kind of forgives him. It's that foreshadowing.
I don't know. Like I have a few misgivings about this route because it's really hard for me to get into the romance coming from my Western background where incest is so wrong.
See, now we get into the real crux of the route.
Yeah, it's just like, I really don't like how they develop these two, especially to be a brother-sister relationship, and then all of a sudden it takes a turn towards a romantic relationship. I don't feel like that's fitting for their characters. I much would have preferred Nayuki to stay in a supportive role and, you know, as a friend, as a more of a sister character. But instead, it ends up kind of like, because we're in Erige, we got to have like, you know, them two getting together. It just feels wrong to me, and I just don't like how that developed.
Well, that's more of a downfall of the medium of the time, especially, rather than an issue with the writing. I mean, there was really nothing they could have... There was no way around it at the time that this was written.
I mean, it was an Erige, and they had to put H scenes, but I think the romance... Like, I don't think the romance was forced. I'll say that. It may have been awkward to some. It wasn't awkward to me because I didn't... I just said I didn't see them as brother and sister. But I don't think it was forced. I think the whole point of this route was to show that because you have this other person who is significant to you, you can tackle problems. You can tackle these important problems not alone. And I think that wouldn't have worked as well without the romance. Like if Yuichi said that if Yuichi made that whole speech about the miracles not being able to happen but I can stay with you, I think it wouldn't have as much impact without the romance.
Like the writing was definitely built on us accepting this romance as it is. I get that, but it still bugs me.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's like a cultural component that it's like really hard to get past, depending on who you are and how you see it. Because, I mean, for me, I remember the first time I read it, I had that exact same feeling, like, oh, they're cousins, like, there's, like, that just doesn't work. And then I guess I learned more about like how, like, a lot of cultures actually had this thing going with first or second cousins regularly getting married, and it was just very, very common for like decades and decades and decades, and it was incredibly common in Japan until like pretty recently, and as a result of a lot of sort of Western influence. And so I guess to me, I just sort of softened on it because I figured, oh well, it's a cultural difference, it's, you know, it's not set in stone that like cousins being together is wrong. Now brother and sister, there's definitely like medical reasons and there's just sort of like a strong natural revulsion to it, but I think I've gotten over my feelings about it as far as cousins, at least in this context.
Like I get that, and that's definitely something that's very prevalent in Japan and portrayed in Japanese media. But my problem is that they'll portray it as brother and sister, not as cousins. Like, that's the relationship they had for the entire common route. And everybody was like, okay with that. And it's like, hey, you two are like really close. It's like, everyone's like, no, we're just brother and sister. And it's like, everyone accepted that. And that was a mutual understanding that they had. Even if Naoki, when she was a kid, she may have had a bit of a crush on Yuichi, she was able to get over that. And I think that's an important part of her character. But then it's like, we're just like dredging up these buried memories for the sake of a sex scene almost. It's just...
Once again, I don't say that it's for the sake of a sex scene. I think it's for the sake of the story. But I do accept that it was awkward. Well, it could have been awkward, not to me, but to other people. And, well...
better. I think I'm just too desensitized at this point because it didn't bother me.
I don't think there's anything we can do about that because it's a cultural thing. I think from a storytelling perspective, if we ignore the whole cultural background, I think it was done well.
But I'm not talking about culture. I'm talking about brothers and sisters.
I don't think you can help it, man. Everybody's always talking about their own culture, whether they mean to or not.
I mean, if we assume that there's a culture that accepts incest from a brother and sister perspective, would that have changed the narrative?
I don't know. Pepe, like, would you be okay if you and your girlfriend treated each other like brother and sister?
I mean, it's very complicated to consider how you treat a brother and a sister, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this coming from someone who actually has a sister.
I have sisters.
I would not be romantically interested in my sister, but the way that I treat her is I wouldn't mind if I treated my girlfriend the same way. Yeah.
Well,
it's very complicated.
Yeah.
I don't want we could talk about this for a very long time.
We could.
This could be a whole separate series of podcasts.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And it's a very deep-seated
cause
problem.
Of debates.
Just like the nature of love and all that shit. Yeah, it's too much for one podcast.
Anyway.
Yeah, but it's definitely like we brought some sauce to the table that it's maybe not as simple as it's easy to dismiss it as just, oh, they're cousins, it's bad. But it's not quite that simple. I still feel like the writing could be better, but yeah, that's just me.
Okay.
I feel like the common route was boring.
It was. Especially Makoto's pranks and everything.
I was very bored.
Oh my god,
route.
After you've seen one of those, you've seen them all.
Yeah.
And I was like, I hated her in the beginning, but she kind of grew on me towards the end.
Same.
See, it's weird. Yeah. I mean, this isn't like, I guess this is kind of, no.
This is where Aspie gets to shit on the thing he just said. Been holding back before now.
I know. I think my main issue with the common root is that there's not any of the heroines interacting with each other.
Yeah.
The best part of like a good common root to me is when you see how they interact with each other and not just with the protagonist.
Yeah, which is why Little Busters is the best common root.
Hey.
Damn straight.
But like, we did have a bit of Naoki Ayu interaction, and I did actually like that. Like, I wish there was a bit more of it. But
Naoki kind of hints that, oh, you like Ayu, don't you?
Yeah, it's like because you treat her like a sister too.
Well,
I'm the only one who can take care of your incest fetish.
God. Alright, let's move on to another key point here.
Alright, so Aizen did not put this up as a key point, but I thought this was a very interesting topic we can take. He said that Akiko is a half-baked parent. She only focuses on one side of the parental coin, nurturing. And a lot of people talked about this on the forum, and this was a pretty nice discussion, I think. How Naoki's reaction to what happened in her route is a result of Akiko's parenting. Aizen specifically says that Akiko lacked discipline, and because of that, Naoki wasn't able to handle like this sort of thing happening. Other people would argue how it's a very traumatic experience, and her reaction was very reasonable.
Yeah, let's not even just go with like some people would. I'm going to right now argue that it is a very natural response to the fact that the only person in her life who is a family member who cares about her, you know, to the level that a mother would, has been like put in the hospital and is possibly gonna die. I'm pretty sure that that's a very normal response. And if she didn't have that response, that's when I would start to worry.
Yeah, it's a position I've been in before. It's a pretty natural response.
Yeah. I'm not gonna argue against that.
I mean, I don't say you're wrong, but I also say that other people might react differently.
Other people might, but I'm not going to hold anything against anybody as far as how they react in those situations. Yeah,
everyone deals with that stuff differently.
Yeah, it's who she is, and it's not because of bad parenting. Like, Jesus, like,
well,
I'm not
saying it's bad parenting, but do you think her reaction was because of Akiko's parenting?
I don't think so. I think it was her own personality. I think there's like two sides of the coin, right? There's like nature and nurture, and I think people downplay the nature part so much. I don't think I don't think that she's just a blank slate who is the result of Akiko's parenting. I think that she's also herself.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as Aizen said, Akiko is practically Jesus. I mean, she went to the hospital and she rose on the third day. So
I actually feel like Akiko is a pretty poorly written character. I was expecting a lot more from her, but she's literally just like, she agrees with everything and like has no objection to anything, and like she has no opinions. She's just kind of there.
She's almost too easygoing.
The only purpose she has is to illustrate some sort of like mystery behind Ayu. Like, she seems to recognize her and she like wants to bring something up but doesn't. But that's,
you know, I used to feel that way, and I feel, and this is going to make me sound even older than I normally do, but as I get older, I definitely feel like that's just a sign of maturity more than anything else. It's just that Akiko is a mature, you know, character, and the problems of teenagers, even if they're major problems, like, as an adult, you just come to deal with them and you know how to handle them. And you also know that when you are in that position as the adult of the situation, that your job is to be the, is basically to be the rock, to sort of let it all happen around you. And even if it, you know, is a big deal, it's her job to act like it's not.
But she really could have gotten more lines.
I mean, yeah, she... I know it's her personality to be very hands-off, and I guess that fits into the narrative.
She's not like a regular mom. She's a cool mom.
Yeah, she's a pretty cool mom. Like, that goes into something that Sanji Sanada also asked. Do you think Akiko knows the full extent of Yuichi and Naiki's relationship? I think she knows everything. I think she would be okay with it, considering Akiko.
I don't see that being the thing that she steps in on.
Would she be the kind of mom who would go up into the room and say, oh, do you want anything? Drinks? Condoms?
Helios in chat says, Japanese walls aren't very thin, so...
aren't very thick, so...
True.
Well, I think we can assume that she does.
Yeah. And she'd be fine with it, because that's who she is.
Say what you will about Akiko and her style of parenting, and you definitely see it in the way she treats Makoto. Like, I did say this before, but I think the way Akiko and Naiki treat Makoto is very different from how I would treat Makoto.
It's definitely weird. Akiko has more relevance to Makoto's story than Naiki, I almost feel.
Yeah,
she does.
In the common root, at least. But relating that again to Nayuki's route, I think I kind of agree with Pai on this. I don't think it's 100% because of the way she brings up Nayuki. But I also think that the reason why Nayuki reacts that way is because she has, like, she's, Akiko is her only family, right? And she's very dependent. And also the way Akiko brings up Naiki, or the way she interacts with Naiki, like, Naiki doesn't have any reason to hate her. She loves her mom, and I would love my mom if she were like Akiko. Well, I would... I love my mom either way.
You would, but I
don't. I was about to say something very bad.
If only.
Anyway. But yeah. Akiko's nurturing personality makes her very endearing, and I think anyone in that situation would be very sad to lose someone that with that kind of endearment.
But that's just like anybody. I mean, if you love your mom, you're gonna be sad when she's gone. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
But I have to like detract more points from this route because that drama was so forced. I mean, fucking hell. Like, oh, mom, please take care today. Like in a very like somber voice, just out of nowhere. Just why? And then, oh, and by the way, she got in a car accident. It's like, what?
Oh my god.
Are you serious?
No, Canon? That was it serious narrative.
Naoki Hisaya,
that was raising
really?
The death flag.
Come on, that's shit.
Obviously, yeah, that's kind of shit.
And they just needed that to give some reason for Naoki to be sad so that Yuichi could tear her up. I don't like this route, you know, guys. Ah!
All right, I'm going to be honest. I think that that was really cheesy, and I think that they could have done a much better job with it if they had sort of included those sorts of exchanges as a regular part of the routine for those characters.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's all they would have had to do is just have, you know, like, every day just before Naoki, you know, leaves for school, it's just like, take care, Mom. Like, you know, it's just... If that was just part of their routine, then having that happen wouldn't have seemed so forced. And I guess to me personally, like, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt way more than I probably should, but when I read that scene, the first way I interpreted it was that this was basically highlighting a thing that always happens. Like, this sort of conversation is actually a fairly common occurrence in that household, and right now they're just highlighting it in order to give foreshadowing for the event that's about to happen. But yeah, it would have been a lot better if they actually would have shown that sort of interaction on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Hisaya's a hack. Go home, everyone.
Hisaya!
But I think aside from that foreshadowing, I actually really like the development of this because it actually does feel natural. Like, this is the sort of shit that actually happens to people. It's not like, you know, magic disease that you start coughing and then all of a sudden you're in the hospital dying for no reason.
Kids.
Or any of the other sort of, like, tropes that don't actually happen to people. Tragic accident that takes somebody that you love away from you unexpectedly. If that didn't happen to people in real life, the world would be a much happier place.
Yeah. And I also think that the way Yuichi reacts to it is very down to earth. You know, I can't make miracles. Nobody can make miracles.
Oh, yeah. The thing with Ayu when, you know, she shows up and then just, like, disappears, that definitely struck me when I was reading this route. Like, that definitely seemed... I mean, I guess it happens at the very tail end of Kamen. But how did you guys feel about that? That sort of struck me as odd because Ayu comes out of nowhere and then just, you know, has...
I'm not going to meet you again.
Yeah. And then just disappears. You never see her again. I mean, I guess you never see any of the other heroines again, but they don't make a point out of them just being, like, gone.
Yeah. It's really setting up for Ayu's route, I guess.
Yeah. It's very obvious that Ayu is the main heroine of canon. Even people who haven't read her out can kind of figure out, she's the main heroine. So I think they're trying to say that, though, you should... Don't forget Ayu, man. You should read her out.
You know, it's funny, because before I actually started reading canon the first time, I actually, for the longest time, I thought Naoki was the main heroine, just based on what I had seen.
Really?
She is very, very popular. Naoki has, like, a ton of fan art. She has even more...
Yeah, exactly.
There's more fan art of Naoki than there is of Ayu.
I am not against that.
Not at all.
And she's also the second most common on their like promotional art for canon. Like she is definitely like the second heroine of the story.
She's Kamari.
For sure.
Yeah, she is.
Yes, she is. And that's
she is a Kamari.
If you don't know what that means, that is... basically Littlebus's main heroine would be Rin, but Kamari ends up appearing on all of the promotional art and stuff anyway.
Of course she does.
Yeah, why wouldn't she?
And of course, there's a mystery that Ai's birthday just happens to be the first day you meet her, which was never brought up.
Hmm.
She never brings it up either.
Yeah, it's just
Ayu, I mean.
Yuichi never makes a connection that, wait a second, that was the first day I met you. It's just weird.
It is weird that never comes up.
Lots of weird shit with Ayu. I guess it's just like really teasing. It's like, oh, you thought you finished the game? No, you haven't. You got to play the other route.
Yep. I think that's what it was saying, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sanji Sonata brings up that after the accident happens, the date just disappears. I think that was really cool. Like, this isn't something Key uses a lot to their full advantage. In this case, it's just like, I feel like the removal of the date in the window makes everything feel a little bit more foreign and unnatural, because something which is always there up to that point is gone, and it's just like, it really hammers in that Akiko's not around anymore. This is a very unnatural situation. I think that was really well done. Maybe it was a coincidence.
Sure.
Maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but it worked out really well how they did that.
I mean, I had never thought of it that way before, but it does make sense. I mean, like, life loses structure when something like that happens.
You know, the familiar becomes unfamiliar.
Key does tend to remove their dates once you get into a route.
Yeah, but this is like at the very end.
They don't always. Yeah, and I think it worked well, as you guys are saying. It made you feel like you don't really know the passage of time after that happens. And I think both Yuichi and Naiki don't realize the passage of time either.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's a really effective way to use that.
I was joking a while ago about how Aizen said she rose again after 3 days, but it might not have even been 3 days.
Mm-hmm. We don't know. It's just like, she got better. Which is another point of criticism, that it's just her recovery is like nothing. It's just, just happened.
Can I say something about that? About her recovery?
Yeah.
Because right after the climax of the route ends, we return to that the scene with the dreams and them talking, and someone was talking about how, like, this is my miracle, you know? I forgot the exact words, I'm sorry.
But
yeah, I kind of got the implication that whoever was talking in the dreams had a part to play in saving Akiko. Like,
you think so?
Yeah, because the way it's worded, like, the very last line is this is my miracle, I think is what they said. If you give me a minute, I can go back to it and check and take a screenshot while I'm at it.
Yeah, it's definitely implied. I think that it's interesting because you can argue either way on this. It's like, is it really a miracle? It's not like Akiko was dead. It's not like she did come back from the grave. It's like, was Nayuki maybe just overreacting? Or what was going on with this? How much danger was Akiko really in? Or was it actually a miracle by this sort of mystery, you know, narrator kind of bringing Akiko back? Like, I think it's interesting, and I think it's one of the kind of sticking points of this route to me, and why I think that it's such a good sort of opening route, is because there is something going on with this setting in canon. Like, you definitely have a sense of it, but the Nayuki route really doesn't go into it at all, and you don't really get much of a sense of what is happening. So I think that I actually like any route that doesn't dive too much into the magic of the setting as a good entrance point for any key work.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Did you find it, Pippa?
I took a screenshot. So the very last line before the end of that dream sequence is, my wish is... Yeah. So wishes. It's kind of implying someone was wishing something, and I think that has to do with Akiko's recovery.
Someone's using the light orbs.
So I always used to think that, yeah, someone's using the...
I always used to feel like there's a connection. I will say this, I feel like there's some sort of a connection between the light orbs and the snow, at least as far as the way that they're drawn.
Yeah. But,
okay.
It's like, true. The light orbs like reverse snow, almost.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
But yeah, after that dream sequence at the end of Nike's route, because all this time I thought the dream sequences, oh, those are Yuichi's dream sequences, but now I'm thinking maybe it's not Yuichi. We'll find out later. And I think that's...
little teaser for the next one.
Next time on Canon Book Club.
I guess that about wraps up our discussion for Nike's route. So, yeah. A lot of mixed opinions. Like, I'm definitely on the more negative side after reading this route, but I don't know. Opinions here generally seem positive, despite.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of mixed opinions, and by that we mean Aspie hates it, everyone else likes it.
It's not the best route, it's not the worst route.
I'll say it has its faults, but I love the message at the end.
Yeah. For sure.
That's my final comment.
Look, I won't say I do like the message of, like, you know, two people supporting each other and depending each other when things get rough and, like, sticking together. Like, it's very much a romance-focused route, and they did do that pretty well. It's just, I have criticisms on how it was handled and how we got to that point, but, yeah. The message isn't bad.
Yeah. Okay.
Fair enough.
And, yeah, so, thanks for joining us, everybody. I guess we should pay attention to the fan art that was generated for this particular route. We had one entry for Naiki.
Thanks.
Actually, no, we had more than one, didn't we?
Two. Two, but they're from the same person. From
Technically Black three. Hayate. All hand-drawn. Really cool. Love to see that.
And let's not forget the Aizen Kobo's canon book wrap.
Yeah. Wink, wink. That was a thing that happened. If you haven't seen that, it's quite an experience. But yeah, so awesome to see the fan art, guys. Make sure you get in lots of fan art for Makoto for her route, and I really hope we can get a lot more fan art this time around, because we didn't get much for the Clannad Book Club, and I'm a little bit sad about that. So if we can keep it going, that would be awesome. So keep up the good work, guys.
I should probably submit my Last Regrets cover at some point as, like, official fan, like, fan art.
We had heaps of awesome forum discussion for this route and the common route. Yeah. Everyone wrote their own little essays, and we got some nice back and forth discussion too, so I really appreciated that. The top posters I found for this route were Aizen Kobu, Canon, Bonecuss, Magowska, the Rational Pie, of course, Kuketsuki Miyu, Naoki Saten, Tsunade Sonata, and Wizard. Did I put that?
I think we need to mention...
Yeah, Pepe too.
I mean, you have to mention Canon again, though, because Canon wrote a whole lot about the common route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. He wrote an excellent analysis on the common route, and I think he just got to Naiki at the very end there. But, yeah, thanks, Canon. You're already carrying the book club for us. But, yeah, that's awesome job to everyone who participated. I know Magowska was definitely very active in that discussion, so I got to point him out. And Aizen Kobu, too. Aizen Kobu's been doing really good. And
yep.
I think I saw a few good posts by Naoki Saten too, so...
Yeah, a lot of it was countering Aizen's points, I guess. But it was nice to see the fact that, like, they are controversial points and they're worth discussing.
Critical discussion is the kind of thing I love to see on this forum. It's just, it makes the podcast a lot more interesting than just say, oh yeah, it was good.
I liked it a lot.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought it was good reading.
I agree.
There we go. 10 out of 10.
Between Akiko jam and strawberry jam, how would you rate this one?
Blueberry jam.
Somewhere in the middle.
I'm not a fan of strawberry jam, so I think I'd rate it orange marmalade.
Ew.
What?
Rainbow bread.
Oh, okay. So,
are we criticizing each other's favorite jam flavors now?
Aspie doesn't like orange marmalade, doesn't like Nike's.
Welcome to the Jam Podcast.
The Jam Project.
Oh, Jam Project. Yeah, hype.
Jesus Christ, we need to end this fucking episode.
Put it out of its misery, please.
Yeah. All right, so next week we're doing Makoto's route, so I'm going to have a lot of catch-up reading to do this time, make sure I'm on top of things. But yeah, if you've already read the route, then please be sure to drop in your discussion on the forum topic. It's going to be awesome. And we'll have a new forum theme for Makoto's route up on the forum too, so yay. Thanks, Miyu, again for all your awesome work there. So yeah, we'll see you next week for Makoto's route. Take care, guys.
All right, guys, don't get hit by a car.
I think this podcast needs to get hit by a car.